Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, April 26, 2018. 10 aid workers go missing outside Yei town.
The area surrounding Yei are being crisscrossed by these different rebel groups, and of late they have been indulging in this business of abducting humanitarian aid workers.
And two of the vice president's bodyguards were killed in an attack outside Juba town.
The convoy of soldiers of the vice president coming from Lobono to Juba got ambushed by criminals on the way. The officer called Jada and then Morbe plus one woman got killed in that ambush.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. But we first go for some breaking news. The Regional Bloc Intergovernmental Authority on Development has postponed phase two of the IGAD brokered high-level revitalization forum in Addis Ababa. In a statement issued a few minutes ago, IGAD said after meeting with South Sudan Opposition Alliance, the South Sudan People's Liberation Army in Opposition, civil society group and other stakeholders, there still exist wide gaps between the different groups. The statement said the office of the chairman of the IGAD Council of Ministers decided to postpone the next peace talks to allow continuation of what it calls shuttle diplomacy meetings with the parties to the South Sudan conflict. The high-level revitalization forum is now scheduled to meet May 17 through to May 21st. The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs said 10 aid workers have gone missing outside Yei town, the capital of South Sudan's Yei River state. OCHA says the aid workers' convoy was en route to Tore County from Yei town early yesterday to conduct a humanitarian needs assessment when it disappeared. Daniel Friday Martin reports for VOA from Yei.
In a statement today, UN OCHA says the 10 workers include one from UN OCHA, two from the UN Children's Agency UNICEF, two from ACROSS, three from Plan International, one from Action Africa Help, and one from the South Sudanese Development Organization, or SSDO. Stephen Loga is SSDO's executive director.
I had contact with my team at 11 yesterday. My team was going to do an assessment on issues relating to wash, water and environmental sanitation. We don't know who has taken them and where they are. Up now, we don't know where they are. We are appealing them that we should release them so that they will continue to help people who are suffering.
UN Humanitarian Coordinator for South Sudan, Alain Nehodeho, is quoted in the UN OCHA statement as saying he is deeply concerned about the well-being of the workers and demands their immediate release without any preconditions. He condemned the attack against aid workers and called on all parties to the conflict to ensure a safe and secure environment conducive to the delivery of humanitarian assistance. SPLA military spokesman Brigadier Lu Rai Kong says he is yet to receive any official communication about the abduction, but accuses opposition groups led by former First Vice President Riek Machar and former SPLA Deputy Chief of Staff Thomas Cirillo of abducting the 10 aid workers.
The area surrounding Yei are being crisscrossed by these different rebel groups, and of late they have been indulging in this business of abducting humanitarian aid workers. And therefore, the international community should not go around beating around the bush. They should contact the leadership of IO and Riek Machar to ensure that these humanitarian aid workers are released within the shortest time possible. And not only that, they should be held accountable because it has become a visual for them to interrupt humanitarian operations.
Colonel Lampol Gabriel, deputy military spokesman of the SPLA IO faction allied to Riek Machar, confirms fighting has occurred in the area.
Within that area, some few days ago, we clashed with the forces under the command of Joseph Baloko of MASH. It is possible that the SPLA IO is totally part of it. If we were the one, immediately, the commander on the ground would have informed us of saying he has done this. So let's not rule out the possibility of other armed groups being responsible on this, because we don't have information that we have them. If we have them, we would be giving information out straight away. It is still very difficult for us to say that, okay, the SLIO is responsible for this. There is no way I can claim this.
South Sudan in Focus was unable to reach the spokesman for Cirilo's rebel movement called the National Salvation Front for comment. Hezkiah Jonathan, deputy chairman of the Relief and Rehabilitation Commission in Yeh River State, condemned those responsible for the disappearance of the 8 workers.
If we don't allow these people to go to do this humanitarian work now, many people will die in the villages, especially those who are returning from Congo. So such activities actually is hurting the citizens more. We wish that they actually release them.
This is the second incident involving 8 workers being held by armed groups in April alone, and the third abduction of 8 workers in the last 6 months. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday Martin in Yeh.
From Yeh, we move to Kajukeji, where church leaders from the area say, despite the signing of the cessation of hostility agreement by the warring parties in December, hundreds of people displaced from the area are still too afraid to return to their homes due to insecurity. The church leaders say fighting continues among armed groups in Kajukeji. Wake Simon Wudu has more for VOA from Juba.
Since early last year, fighting between government and armed opposition forces has prompted hundreds of thousands of people in the Kajukeji area to either flee to settlement camps in northern Uganda or take refuge in internally displaced persons' camps within Kajukeji. Bishop Emmanuel Murie of Kajukeji Diocese of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan and Bishop Joseph Abba of Liwolo Area Diocese say both groups have disrespected the ceasefire agreement they signed last December. The bishops say the fighting has made it impossible for the displaced citizens to return to their homes. Bishop Abba says some displaced residents have tried to return to their villages to collect food or personal belongings, but it's dangerous.
Going back to collect a food, a mango, you are risking your life. One of the group may be good. If the government said you can come, what about the rebel forces? They will not like it. And this will end up to be a victim. Either the rebel forces can be good, but the government forces will consider this people a rebel. They end up being beaten, they end up being tortured, and some of them lose their lives.
Bishop Mure says both government forces and rebel fighters must respect the cessation of hostilities agreement so the thousands of displaced persons have the confidence they need to return home.
The government need to discipline even to give a proper discipline to the soldier and give ethics of how they can care for people, because these are the people they are taking care of. And if people see that spirit of caring and then treating them as their own, taking care because they are there for them, that alone speaks so much.
Bishops Murie and Abba are urging the warring parties to approach the next phase of high-level revitalization forum in May with honesty and good faith.
What we are requesting, the government and the opposition forces, to put the interest and the needs of the people of South Sudan and the suffering of the people of the South Sudan above their personal interest. The people of South Sudan need peace. And we need this time. They must discuss this peace with the open mind, with the open heart, with the seriousness, and with the honesty.
SPLA military spokesman Brigadier General Lulurai Kwang confirms fighting continues in Kajukeji between government and armed opposition fighters, but blames the rebels for initiating their clashes.
They should have come out clearly to say who had been on the offensive. And in this case, we have been saying that the rebels have been all over attacking our defensive positions around Kajukeji, at places like Mangalatoria and other small areas. The same thing around Yeh.
The SPLAIO's deputy military spokesman, Colonel Lampol Gabriel, disputes that accusation.
Since we signed the cessation of hostilities up to today, we have been on strict orders to maintain our defense position. Immediately, the government went on a rampage. If you have seen of recent, they attacked us in Yeh earlier this year. They came to Kajukeji and attacked us. They came up to Kimo and came up to Mangalore and Liwalo. Liwalo and Mangalore are under our control. We did not go to them.
It has been difficult, if not impossible, to verify the claims of both warring parties since most residents have fled the area while the fighting continues unabated. Bishops Muria and Abba say the thousands of displaced people sheltering in IDP camps located close to Uganda's districts of Moyo and Yumbe lack food, shelter, and medical care. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Still in Juba, two bodyguards of South Sudan's vice president were killed on Wednesday when their vehicle fell into an ambush at Rajaf County outside Juba town. Callisto Lado is the acting spokesman in the office of James Waniga. Lado says armed men killed the two bodyguards of Vice President Waniga and one woman who was in the car they were using. He says the vice president was not with his bodyguards during the incident.
The convoy of soldiers of the vice president coming from Lobola to Juba got ambushed by criminals on the way. And the officer called Jada, and then Morbe plus one woman got killed in that ambush.
And how far is the area from Juba town where this incident took place?
And this incident took place exactly in Rajaf County. It is in exactly an area called Logo. It is after the car left Lobonok and they crossed Langkit and they entered Rajaf County. So when they reached Logo, they got ambushed, and the people who ambushed them are not known to us up to now because they happened to kill the officer and one other comrade, Morbe, and one woman. And they have also looted whatever was in the car after killing them, and they entered the bushes.
This officer who was killed, what is his rank? Can you tell us a little bit about his rank and how the work he does in the office of the vice president?
Yeah, Comrade Jada is a first lieutenant in the Presidential Guard Unit. He is in the close protection of His Excellency Dr. James Waniga, the vice president of the Republic. He has served for so long in the headquarters of His Excellency Dr. James Waniga. We describe him as a brave officer who is loyal and committed to his service and actually dedicated to the service for the sake of his people and the country as a whole. So we have really lost a brave and courageous and charismatic officer in the headquarters.
Normally, the office of the VIP traveled with the heavy presence of the military. Was that the case? I mean, was this officer having other colleagues accompanying him on this mission?
There were not many in the car. In the car only has three people, the officer and then the other two comrades, one man and one woman. They were coming from Lobonok to Juba for a specific task, so they have not come in a big number, and they were not armed to the teeth as people used to describe the movements of people or the soldiers from headquarters to headquarters or from one location to another. They were actually sure that there was no problem on the road because the road used to be safe, the road used to be okay. But of course, an ambush is an ambush. When the criminals organize and they actually said an intention to do something, they always surprise people in this way.
Was Dr. Waniga in the convoy?
It is worth mentioning that that His Excellency Dr. James Waniga, the Vice President of the Republic, is not in Juba as of now. He is in Bahr al-Ghazal and in Kwajok in particular. So he has gone there to visit Bahr al-Ghazal region and then sensitize the people about the peace process. So when this incident happened, he's not in the town, he's in Bahr al-Ghazal region for that official tour. He's assigned or delegated by His Excellency the President to do that one. But of course, he's now aware of what happened.
That's Callisto Lado, acting spokesman in the office of South Sudan's Vice President James Waniga. Lado was speaking with me from Juba yesterday. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at growing risk of cybercrime in Zimbabwe. That story is coming up after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what do you love most about your family?
The closeness that we have in the family. We are always together. Whenever there is a problem, we come together and handle it together. Each time we have a function, we come together. We are very supportive of each other.
What I love from my family, they are so caring for me. See, I've came to Uganda because of my family. They helped me a lot to pay my school fees, caring for my personal properties, like they pay me some cash pocket money to help me.
Well, it's the love and the support. Firstly, the love, because they raised me, basically, and they've been giving me all that I need. You know, they've been there from the start, you know, since from education, they've been helping me out.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. President Salva Kiir made headlines this week when local media quoted him as saying he will not step down. But as INBO reports, one South Sudan expert says observers need to tread carefully in their attempts to understand the president's comments.
President Salva Kiir had this to say during an event in Juba honoring the late General James Ajongo, the former SPLA chief.
They think that I'm the obstacle to peace. And if I'm removed after signing the agreement, then there will be no problem. They want me to sign the agreement and then step down immediately. Just imagine, what will be my incentive? What is my incentive in bringing peace? If it is peace that I will bring and then I step aside, nobody can do it.
The Enough Project's Brian Adeba says one needs to read between the lines when it comes to interpreting President Kiir's public statement.
I think that we need to be very careful about interpreting what he said. I think when he mentioned incentives, it wasn't so much about him stepping down, but it was about what is it there on the table, what is there on the table for the government so that to make it want to sign the peace deal. It was not about him stepping away per se, really. It was about what can the government get out of the peace deal, what is there that would incentivize it, that would encourage it to sign the peace deal. So we got to get that context correct.
Adeba says President Kiir's comments are the result of an atmosphere where top leaders are not held accountable for their actions.
It generally shows the impunity that those in government in South Sudan exercise. They feel that government is part and parcel of their property. They have a right to it, and therefore they just can't leave like that, or they can't, they can do as much as they want with it.
Adeba says the other thing that comes to mind is how far apart the parties still are on reaching a lasting peace agreement in Addis Ababa.
We know that he's made ways just to the run-up, in the run-up to the talks on 2nd May. He's doing a lot of shuttle diplomacy. He's scheduled to meet Riek Machar, he's scheduled to meet the government, he's scheduled to meet the opposition, basically to sort of bridge the gap as much as possible before they get to the talks on May 2nd. But what Kiir's statement, President Kiir's statement, is indicative of is how far apart the parties are on the major contentious issues on the table in Addis.
Adeba says the chances for peace in Addis Ababa are really quite slim, considering all of the obstacles in the way. Mr. Kiir challenged the notion that he is the problem when it comes to attaining peace in South Sudan. During his remarks about the late Ajongo, Kiir said he would wait for the authority who took Ajongo's life to, quote, show us another person who will do this job that Ajongo did not finish. But Adeba believes there are many capable South Sudanese who can bring the country to peace.
It behooves of us as South Sudanese to actually ask ourselves and be very honest. Is he the only person? He's not the only person. There are other capable people. If given the chance, they can step up to the plate. The same thing with Ajongo himself. Ajongo was a fine soldier, experienced person, very humble, a person with very good leadership skills, as many of his comrades can attest. Unfortunately, of course, he has left us, but there are other people that can step up to the plate.
And Adeba refutes the idea of a leadership vacuum in South Sudan, noting the country has many capable women and men who can step up and lead the country. Ayan Dengbior, VOA News, Washington.
From Washington, we move to Tanzania, where the government has announced that bloggers and online forum must register with Communication Authority, a move likely to stir criticism from rights groups who say the government has worked to muzzle dissent in recent years. However, Tanzania is not alone. Other countries in the region are also pushing ahead with steps to police online discourse. Muhammad Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
The new law in Tanzania targets online platforms like blogs, podcasts, and other streaming live content, for example, via YouTube channels. The government says it will monitor the platforms for hate speech, obscene content, and threats to national security and public order. Local bloggers fear the oversight will be used to stifle dissent. Maxine Mello is the founder of Jamii Forums, a website about corruption in Tanzania. He has been detained several times since 2015, including two formal arrests.
We have been through a lot of pushes from our government in a couple of past years because authorities wanted to know our whistleblowers, and we said we cannot do this. And most of these whistleblowers are the people who were helping to reveal some misconduct in the government. And as we speak, we are still facing three trials, and all of them are about revealing the sources of our stories.
Tanzania's government spokesman declined viewers' request for an interview. On Friday, the Tanzania Communication Regulatory Authority said the owners of online platforms must pay about $900 to get a license. The state agency also said it will use suspensions to force the removal of content it deems in violation of the law. Those who fail to comply the new regulations could face fines and up to a year in jail. Reporters Without Borders has slammed the license fee as exorbitant and called the new law the latest blow to free speech in Tanzania. Since taking office in 2015, President John Magufuli has cracked down on a range of issues, including corruption, tardiness among civil servants, and criticism of his government. Newspapers seen as critical have been shut down or their licenses suspended. In February, two opposition politicians were jailed for allegedly insulting the president. Henry Maina is the East Africa Regional Director for Article 19, a global NGO that promotes freedom of expression and information worldwide.
Tanzanians are beginning to organize themselves online. And so here is a clear measure of a state policy to try and close down civic space. And in so doing, they are not only closing down the physical space, they are also closing down the virtual space so that Tanzanians cannot organize.
Maina points to a regional trend. Countries like Uganda, Democratic Republic of Congo, and Ethiopia have cut the internet or restricted access to certain social media sites during times of unrest. Rights groups like Article 19 urge restraint.
There is a big discussion globally on how to perhaps regulate social media, but that must not be equated to criminalizing social media. That yes, regulation may be required, and if so, the regulation must be done for only three or four main purposes. One is for purposes of protecting the reputation of others. Two is for purposes of what will be narrowly described as national security. Three, public morality. And four, public health. Any other reason that states may throw up as a reason for regulating or control of social media in and of itself would be a violation of human rights.
In Tanzania, bloggers and administrators of other online platforms have until May 5th to get registered. Their licenses then will come up for renewal for a fee every 3 years. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
One of Zimbabwe's biggest online content producers recently had its Facebook account hacked. It lost control of the page, which reaches hundreds of thousands of viewers every month. Reporter Hosea Zenvashi takes a look at the growing risk of cybercrime in Zimbabwe.
Busstop TV produces comic skits and news reports that cover social and political issues. Its videos often go viral on social media platforms Zimbabweans use. Over the years, it has gathered a huge following online, and that might have led to the attack on its Facebook page. Lucky Aaron is the co-founder and producer of Busstop TV, and he says something that seemed innocent led to the company losing control of its Facebook page.
We received a message from an account called J.C. Miller requesting that we should partner with that account to put sponsored adverts on our Facebook page. Then he sent a link for us to follow and create a Facebook business account.
Aaron says after that, things went wrong.
In that process of following that link and understanding how Facebook business works, that's how we lost our account. We managed to fish information and use my account to get to our page and remove all the admins.
The page had over 110,000 likes, and Aaron says it was reaching over 500,000 views a month. People outside Zimbabwe say they can view the page, but for fans in Zimbabwe, it's blocked in Zimbabwe. Chris Musodza is with Digital Society in Zimbabwe, a volunteer organization of technology experts working to protect rights online.
What has happened to Busstop TV, it affects many of us because, lack of access to information, we rely on such platforms as Zimbabweans. But this has been happening for many people, and this is not the first time I've heard of it. This has been happening for a while.
Musodza adds that Zimbabwe needs some form of legislation to protect citizens. As internet usage rises in the country, more people are exposed to criminal activity, he says. Munyara Zidodo is the editor of Open Pali, an online publication that covers parliament business and other political events. He says it's worrying that cybersecurity is not a priority for Zimbabweans.
Cybersecurity issues are not something that are high priority on ordinary Zimbabweans, but it's something that I think civil society organizations and corporates and individuals need to work hard to sensitize people.
Dodo says that online crime, however, should not be an excuse for government to clamp down on citizens, infringe on the right of free expression, or increase online surveillance. For VOA, this is Kudzai Nawashe from Harare.
That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Mama Sora by Freedom Boys.
Bitu Brothers, Naski and Freedom Boys. Nam, Mina WJ, Timoga, let them know. I am.
We've been listening to the Freedom Boys with the song Mama Sora. I am John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Would like to know what you think about this show. Our email is southsudan@voanews.com. You can also get us on Facebook. Our Facebook name is South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Mm-hmm.
mazora mapi muscula rabuna biwadi leana tani kamasu wana zede mama ukora itapi sekiri muhabata nina de yeah 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 mazora.